that I gave yesterday, it was somewhat hurt, but we passed from difficult to difficult, and at times we take a journey off a little so that we may relax a little, and yet this relaxation can be useful. So I thought we should read something from Plato which is not so difficult, and which having read will give you a further light on what we spoke yesterday. This is a passage which comes in the book called The Republic. Republic, as you know, is the main book written by Plato in a form of a dialogue. And this particular passage begins with the question, what is a philosopher? Now yesterday I had told you the difference between a man in the street and a philosopher. And I said that even when man of street uses universals in his thinking, he is not aware of it, whereas a philosopher is aware of it. He knows where exactly he is using universals, and then he tries to reconcile and bring together universals in a kind of a symphony. Many of you are musicians, so you know what is a symphony. And these harmonies of universals, there are hundreds of universals, like cattiness and horseness, so many universals in the world, chairness. Plato spoke of an ideal bed, and all other beds are, as it were, copies of that ideal bed. So universal bed, as it were. So there are hundreds of universals. Then to combine those universals until you come to a great large synthesis of three greatest universals of truth, beauty and goodness. And then again you reconcile these three universals and come to a supreme universal which he calls the good. And then this good is the supreme idea, supreme universal. And then I told you yesterday, Sri Aurobindo's concept of real idea, the supreme good, the supreme universal manifested by the reality itself, in which the idea expresses exactly what is in reality. So there is exactly what is in reality. So there is no contradiction between the two, no distortion. It's a straight ray, as it were, from reality, without any distortion, no crookedness. Now this whole idea, which if you repeat, becomes very simple afterwards, and we shall repeat several times. And I want to repeat again and again, because to be in company of Plato is one of the greatest honors of human life. It is like visiting one of the greatest cities of the world. And Plato is one of the greatest cities of the world himself. If you look into his ideas, and if each idea is like an object in the city, and then the whole city is full of ideas of Plato. So if you sit with Plato in a big city, it's a tremendous honor. And that is why I choose very often Plato as an illustration of a mind in company with whom you feel yourself elevated and you feel a tremendous joy. So now it is this Plato who has, in order to explain his own philosophy, he has given a kind of analogy. Now earlier I have explained to you analogical arguments. Analogy is a simile. You compare one object with the other and then say, just as this object is like this, this object is like this. This object has this quality, that object has this quality. Then you say that since this quality exists here, this quality also should be existing here. This is called analogical argument. Now, Plato, in order to explain his philosophy, he has given an analogy. It is called the simile of the den or simile of the cave. If you enter into a cave, he says, then you find in the cave pillars. Now, to each pillar, there is one human being or one slave, as it were, tied to the pillar. And in tied in such a way that the slave can see only on one side. He cannot turn back and see what is behind. He can only see what is in the front. It's an analogy between a man of perception and man of reason. A man of perception is tied only to his senses and he cannot turn back and see what is behind. So he has only perceptions and nothing more. Now if there is a big fire behind the prisoners, then they will see, what will they see on the wall? You can imagine, supposing there is a fire behind and the prisoners are tied to the pillars, what will they see on the front in the wall? You will only see shadows. So perceptions are always perceptions of shadows, according to Plato. They will not even know themselves. The prisoners will not know themselves. They will only see that the shadows and nothing more than that. And now suppose one day one prisoner comes out of the imprisonment. Somehow he unchains himself. He breaks the knot by which he was tied to the pillar. And then he looks behind and lo and behold he sees a great fire, which he had not even imagined ever. There is no comparison between fire and shadows. He had only seen shadows. He could not have even imagined that there could be something like fire. And he could not have imagined that it is because of the fire that shadows are created. So the origin of shadows he could have never imagined. And then as he moves out of the cave, he finds a huge sun outside in the sky. In comparison with this fire is nothing. So huge fire of which you call the ball of the sun, in which, in the light of which everything is so clear and so wonderful. Similarly, if you unchain yourself from the sense perception, look behind with reason, and you find the light behind, you find the universals. And you go behind universals and see the supreme universal, the sunlight. And then you feel compassion for those who are imprisoned. And you come back and tell everybody, look, my dear friends, this is not all, this is nothing. This is only a kind of a trivial thing that you are seeing. Splendid things are behind. So the whole philosophy of Plato is explained in the form of a story. So if you know the story quite well, if you know the simile quite well, it will be very easy for you to remember Plato's theory. So let us read now this simile of the den. Page number 129, you said, no? This is taken from the Republic of Plato. It is a dialogue in which the main speaker is Socrates. The other one who is hearing and talking to him is Glaucon, another friend of Socrates. It's a dialogue between the two. Maybe there may be many others also at the same time in the dialogue. Now, there is an introduction to this, and let us read first the few lines of introduction. This is a more graphic presentation of the truths presented in the analogy of the line. In particular, it tells us more about the two states of mind called in the line analogy, belief and illusion. We are shown the ascent of the mind from illusion to pure philosophy and the difficulties which accompany its progress. And the philosopher, when he has achieved the supreme vision, is required to return to the cave and serve his fellows, his very unwillingness to do so being his chief qualification. As Concord points out, the best way to understand the simile is to replace the clumsier apparatus of the cave by cinema, though today television is an even better comparison. It is the moral and intellectual condition of the average man from which Plato starts. And though clearly the ordinary man knows the difference between substance and shadow in the physical world, the simile suggests that his moral and intellectual opinions often bear as little relation to the truth as the average film or television program does to real life. This is only an introduction, not a very brilliant one, but still something. Anyway, let us go to the main text. In text, when it begins with the word I want you to go on to picture the enlightenment or ignorance. Now, their I refers to Socrates. Socrates was speaking to Glaucon. So he says, I want you to go on to picture the enlightenment or ignorance of our human condition somewhat as follows.